the Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. You see it, we help you do it. AIB, for the life you're after.
Now to the news that US President Trump is moving forward with tariffs this weekend on some of America's largest trading partners, Canada, Mexico and China, with promises or threats even to target the EU. Shortly we'll be joined by economist Tony Foley to look at the impacts of those tariffs. But first, David Frum, former scriptwriter for President George W. Bush, will give his thoughts on Trump and tariffs. We caught up with him in advance of last night's announcement at the end of another extraordinary week in the US, which saw the devastating airline crash in Washington that killed 67 people. I first asked him about President Trump's reaction to the tragic air accident, where he blamed diversity policies and the Joe Biden administration for the crash.
One of the jobs of the president, the American system, is to be the mourner, the consoler, to speak for the nation. And that's a part of the job that Donald Trump has never cared to do. And interestingly, his wife, the First Lady, Melania Trump, has never even attempted. And so instead of grieving and saying every resort, what you would normally say, what President Obama would have said, what President Bush would have said, what President Clinton would have said, which is we mourn with the families, and when the time for mourning is over, then there we will have all the resources of the federal government to get to the bottom of this terrible incident and discover what happened and prevent anything from happening ever again. It's not hard. There's probably a word processing template you can use to tell the president what to say and what not. But Donald Trump doesn't do that. His mode is attack. This did happen on his watch. He did recently fire the head of the Federal Aviation Authority just 1 year into a five-year term because that person was at odds with some of Elon Musk's business plans. So he may have felt some breath of blame on him. And so his response was naturally to attack. Blame minorities, blame women, blame the disabled. It is a reminder of the difference in style between Donald Trump and every other president, the lack of humanity at the core of his message.
How do you think it's gone down with his voters?
Well, you never become president by appealing only to your voters. Donald Trump has always gambled that he could. He returned to power in 2024 because in addition to his core group, he appealed to a number of people who aren't normally his voters. It's a big coalition. So he did well with minorities. He did well, especially among American Hispanics. He did well, better than usual, among Black Americans, especially men. So he has insulted some of the people who took a chance on him in 2024. The real thing that is going on here, though, this indicates to me, is Trump won, elected in 2016 on a fluke. He won got 3 million fewer votes than Hillary Clinton, but because the Electoral College, he became president. He inherited three very easy years, 2017, 18, 19, years of economic growth, years of a relatively orderly world situation. When he got handed his first crisis in 2020, the pandemic, he couldn't cope. He fell apart. He couldn't deal with the mechanics of it. He couldn't deal with the humanity of it. And his administration came apart and he was defeated. Well, this second term is giving indications that it's going to be a much bumpier ride than the first term. Interest rates are rising. The world situation is, of course, very tense. And Donald Trump was given this first crisis, this terrible tragedy, probably years in the making. And you can see his instincts to catch the ball are not good. And there are going to be many balls thrown his way.
And that is in stark contrast, in a way, to the very early outcomes, for want of a better word, when he said he wanted Greenland and the Danish Prime Minister said, no, you can't have it. But very quickly, Denmark was talking about ramping up security and being open to discussions with the United States on various other issues around Greenland. When he said to Colombia, you guys aren't taking back migrants that we're sending on the planes, very quickly there's a conversation. And governments in Europe and in other places are really, really running scared. And that is, that plays well to his style of doing things and getting the things that he wants to achieve. So this is kind of the first real blip in that sense.
Well, let's examine those two cases you mentioned. So you feel a pang of hunger, you reach for a bag of chips and you eat something and you feel temporarily satiated. Did the chips work? Well, they didn't. You didn't get any food value from them, and you've developed a bad habit that is going to serve you ill in the future. So the Greenland matter, yes. The bullying of NATO ally EU member Denmark led the Danes to say some things that Trump could claim as victories. But, you know, The United States went to war in 1990 at the head of a world coalition to prevent Saddam Hussein from changing his boundary with Kuwait, from annexing Kuwait without changing an international border by force. It is, the Americans have shed blood and treasure to defend the principle, no changing borders by force. And Donald Trump is now opening his presidency by threatening to do just that. Well, the United States is more powerful than Saddam Hussein's Iraq, but no one is so powerful as to dispense with the need for friends and allies. That's what happened in Colombia. You know, Trump is bullying Mexico and Canada, and they're not moving anywhere. They have to get along with the United States. But Colombia, which is headed by a very left-wing ex-guerrilla or ex-sympathizer with the guerrilla terrorist movements, who is very hostile to the United States, it's one of the floating pieces on the international board. Colombia does not have to have a good relationship with the United States. There's a lot of anti-Americanism in Colombia. The reason there's a Panama Canal and an independent nation of Panama is because a century ago, the United States essentially ripped away a portion of Colombian territory. Americans don't remember, Colombians do. So yes, Trump was able to exact some rhetorical triumph. I mean, it's not like the flights weren't happening before, they were, but he was able to get a rhetorical triumph. But at the price of sending a message to every independent-minded country, you know, the United States is a less good bet than it used to be. And when we invited you to join our U.S.-led liberal world trading order, our U.S.-led security systems, and promise you the slight diminishment of your sovereignty would pay off in prosperity and security, that deal is changing in ways that everyone's going to be thinking about. Not Canada, not Mexico, but Vietnam, the Philippines, Indonesia, countries that do not have to have a relationship with the United States.
What about within the United States itself and the question of illegal migrants and his decision to begin mass deportations? I saw, for example, that India had begun a cooperative process of taking back 18,000 Indian illegal migrants from the United States. The deportations had been going on, but they seem to have accelerated. Is there potentially a big economic cost to all of that in the U.S.?
Well, a lot of Donald Trump's method has been taking credit for other people's work, rebranding it and claiming it as his own. The United States already deports many, many, many people, has been doing, and the deportation schedule has been rising over the past year and a bit. But he's really counting on Americans not being able to do arithmetic. So we have a population of an unauthorized population of various kinds of between 11 and 14 million. Not all of them are strictly illegal. Some of them are here on temporary protected status. Some are here in an asylum process, which is abusive. Their asylum claims will be rejected in the end. They should not have come. But the fact is they do have a piece of paper, so they're not illegal exactly. So 11 to 14 million minus 18,000 leaves about 11 to 14 million. So the way you change, you have to change the whole intake of your economy, the whole dependence on unskilled labor. We have a construction industry that is 25 to 40% dependent on immigrant labor, most of it illegal. And the numbers vary, obviously, in the center of the country, they use less immigrant labor. In California, Texas, Florida, New York, they use more. Immigrant labor, and especially illegal immigrant labor, is concentrated in some of the most unpleasant and dangerous work, like roofing. That's an area where probably the majority of people who do the work are illegal. Now, what happens to the American I think most Americans say, that's not right. We shouldn't be using illegal people. And by the way, we notice that one of the reasons the work stays so dangerous is because it is used by illegal people. Why aren't there more machines? Why aren't there more safety protocols? Well, that might cost a little more, at least in the short run. So again, we're all involved here. But there's no question that enforcing these rules will be temporarily expensive. And at the same time as Trump is talking about all these tariffs, and they don't just raise the price of tomatoes and avocados. They raise the price of everything, because everything goes into something. We think of tariffs as affecting what's on our breakfast table, but it's actually in everything you buy. There are components that were traded.
Do you think for that reason, when it comes to tariffs, that he will actually be a lot more selective and targeted, both in relation to the countries of origin for the imports, as well as the sectors and the goods? Because really, it just wouldn't be possible or practical to have wholesale enormous tariffs the way he had threatened?
Targeted tariffs is like precision bombing. It's something easy to say, very hard to do. Let me give you a story I reported on. So very tiny motors are used for many purposes, and they mostly come from China. America's largest manufacturers of outboard motors, which are a big recreational activity in the United States, all depend on these Chinese motors. So you, how do you target a tariff that says, we don't want Chinese motors going into automobiles, but we do want this little ones. And when I say little, it's a certain size, it's hard to specify the kind that are used by outboard motors because they won't be able to diversify to Vietnam. That industry has not existed in the United States since the 1950s or 60s. You can't. What you end up doing is just blundering around. And like his OMB freeze, like his creating havoc that you, because you never knew how the supply chains work. You put a tariff on Modelo beer, which is the most popular low-calorie mass market beer in the United States. It comes from Mexico. But the Modelo brewery is the largest buyer of American barley in the world. So what happens to the barley makers? You thought you were tariffing beer. You end up, the thing to remember about tariffs, and it's true for everybody, for every project of protectionism, every product is an input. Everything goes into something. We're all connected on global supply chains. You start tampering with the market mechanism anywhere, you feel it where you least expect.
So what does he end up doing? Go ahead anyway and take the hit?
Trump believes in tariffs. It's the one thing. He's changed his mind about everything, about abortion, about immigration. But tariffs has been consistent since he began seeking a political career in the 1980s. In term one, he was surrounded by people who thought basically the idea was stupid. And there's a famous incident where economic advisor Gary Cohn literally snatched a paper off Donald Trump, off his desk in the first term, to hide it, to stop Trump from signing an order canceling the U.S.-South Korea free trade agreement. And Trump seems to have forgotten about it for long enough for Cohn's arguments to prevail. This time he's surrounded by enablers. So he will probably do many of the things he wants. But if you think this is strategic, I think you're mistaken. Trump deeply believes in tariffs and deeply doesn't understand how tariffs work and what they do.
David Frum of The Atlantic, former scriptwriter for George W. Bush and author of Trumpocracy there.